It being 1:30, the House will now proceed to the consideration of private members' business as listed on today's order paper.
Members' business, affaires menant les députés. Reprise du débat.
Resuming debate on motion M312, Special Committee of the House on subsection 223.1 of the Criminal Code. The Honourable Member from Saint-Léonard, Saint-Michel. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Deputy Speaker, and congratulations on your appointment. This is the first opportunity I've had to say so.
M312. Let me state that at the outset, I am proud to stand with my opposition colleagues in voting against this motion. Much of the discussion in this House has turned on the issue of debate. Namely, the Conservative member who introduced this bill insists that this motion does nothing more than foster debate over the definition of personhood in the Criminal Code. In reality, this is just a backdoor to reopen the debate over abortion in Canada, a debate that has been closed for many years. This issue has been laid to rest in the minds of so many Canadians, and frankly, I share the astonishment that we are again in this House needing to debate something for which so many women and men fought tirelessly decades ago.
The member for Kitchener Centre, the sponsor of this motion, insists that he just wanted to improve the legal definition of human being in Canada. In order to do that, this motion advocates the creation of a special committee that would be tasked with assessing subsection 223.1 of the Criminal Code. By tabling a motion that uses such neutral language when referring to the definition, the current definition of human being, that is a motion which doesn't indicate whether the committee should amend or keep the current version of 223.1, the member may insist that his main concern is to improve legislation. But that's not true. The sponsor of this motion doesn't deny that he's against abortion. But he implies that motion M312 really just has to do with tidying up archaic legislation. Let's be honest. Old legislation is not necessarily bad legislation. The Constitution Act of 1867 is almost 150 years old, and yet no parliamentarian has attempted to repeal the Constitution just because it's old. And in the same manner, murder has been illegal for a long time. But I don't think this government, which calls itself tough on crime, is going to decriminalize murder simply because the laws against it are very old.
If he truly believes that Section 223.1 is archaic, the member for Kitchener Centre should seek to amend this section instead of trying to have a special committee set up to take on the burden of doing research and making decisions. Why use resources funded by the taxpayers to hold a debate by parliamentarians that most Canadians, the large majority of Canadians, do not want and find offensive? Why accept these terms of the debate when the sponsor himself has said that he would like the legal decision, definition rather, of the human being, he would like to have it include fetuses, which would limit abortion?
In the code, why doesn't he just propose the change? Why doesn't he lay forward for all Canadians to see exactly what he wants to have us legislate? Instead of pretending, he is neutral and is doing this in the interest of making better laws. Truly, if the government were interested in better laws, it wouldn't have gutted the Law Commission of Canada. It wouldn't have closed the Court Challenges Program. It wouldn't insist on legislation that is unconstitutional. And just this week, we saw one of its statutes overturned by the Ontario courts. Mr. Speaker, the Criminal Code is in need of reform and cleaning. Indeed, on this whole topic of personhood, the Criminal Code still speaks of therapeutic abortion committees, something the Supreme Court struck down in 1988. If he wants to make a better civil code, criminal code, why doesn't he propose to removing this relic that harkens back to a time when women didn't have a choice? Mr. Speaker, as a non-lawyer, I can't profess to be a great legal scholar, but I do understand that extending legal personhood to fetuses, the ultimate goal of motion M312, according to its sponsor, would jeopardize the status of abortion in Canada because it would grant legal protections to fetuses, such as the right to personal security. The question, of course, is where would the slippery slope take us? Would this mean outlawing abortion entirely? Would we also then limit what women can do while pregnant? Think about it. If we start down this path, we can easily see the same member coming back here in a few years to say, well, abortion is illegal, but now why don't we make it legal for women to work in their last trimester? Mr. Speaker, where would this assault on the rights of women end? Canadian jurisprudence on the issue of fetal personhood is clear. A fetus may not be considered a person under existing law, aside from subsection 223(1) of the Criminal Code, which clearly states that a fetus is not a person until the moment of complete birth, and a number of Supreme Court decisions have indicated that a fetus cannot be considered a person in Canadian law. Mr. Speaker, it's no surprise to anyone paying attention that this government has been attacking our courts, limiting the power of judges through mandatory minimum sentences, reducing options for sentencing alternatives. But the law in Canada is settled here. And the only suggestion the member opposite can seem to muster up for changing it is, well, it's old. That simply isn't good enough, especially when it comes to the rights of women. During the 2011 election campaign, the current Prime Minister promised that his party would not change the laws on abortion, saying, and as I quote, as long as I am the Prime Minister, we will not reopen a debate on abortion. We will leave the law as it stands. The Prime Minister should hold his party and that member to this promise. The Liberal Party does not support reopening the abortion debate in any way. And frankly, Mr. Speaker, it's a shame that we're wasting debate on this when Canadians are out of work. Budget cuts across multiple sectors are putting the health and safety of Canadians at risk. There's lack of affordable housing, and many First Nation communities live in circumstances that are downright appalling for a first world nation. Monsieur le Président,
Mr. Speaker, the government chief whip stated that he did not want women to go back to the previous era where some were forced to obtain abortions from illegal and medically dangerous sources. He said this should never happen in a civilized society. And yet, that is what may well happen should abortion be criminalized, and we know this full well.
We should not be turning back the clock on women's rights. Instead, we should be making progress together for women, be it on pay equity, reopening the offices of state of women in Canada that were closed by this government, ensuring that affordable housing and child care options exist, and ensuring women are represented in public life through judicial appointments and the like. When the member from Kitchener Centre and his members talk about wanting to make better laws, why not solve issues relating to matrimonial real property for First Nations on reserves? Why not create a pay equity commission and tribunal, such as having been called for by the Native Women's Association of Canada? Why not reverse the old age security decision that will harm senior women who live longer than men, and because of workplace discrimination may be particularly precarious financial situations? Mr. Speaker, I'm proud to be part of a party fighting for the rights of women, not turning back the clock through backdoor attempts to reopen the abortion debate, and through retrogressive policies that are prejudicial to the majority of Canadians. Mr. Speaker, je m'attends que cette motion...
I expect this motion to be defeated, and I will be voting against it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Resuming debate, the Honourable Member from Mississauga South.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise today to speak in favour of Motion 312, as proposed by the Member for Kitchener Centre. For the benefit of my colleagues on all sides of the House, I want to point out that the only thing Motion 312 does is to propose a study. Canadians have different views on this important law, which Motion 312 proposes to study, and that is even more reason why Parliament and this House need to show leadership. Is it good for Canada if members of Parliament are afraid to even hear evidence about any law? This issue already provokes passionate debate among Canadians. I believe this passion can only fester if it continues to be ignored by Parliament. Isn't it better to shed some light on a subject rather than to hide it away somewhere? Or worse, to pretend it isn't even there? Mr. Speaker, this House is always being asked to update and change many Canadian laws. After all, that's what we do here. For example, we were asked to update our gambling laws by the member for Windsor-Tecumseh. You may know him. Another recent example is the court's calling for an update to our laws on prostitution. Wouldn't it be strange if Parliament refused to even study an update of our 400-year-old definition of who is a human being in law? Canadians deserve better than that from us. They deserve a little more courage. Canadians expect more commitment to the true facts from us. Some say the courts have already settled the question of who is a human being in Canada. Mr. Speaker, let's be clear. That is simply not true. Court after court has said, again and again, that this issue is so important that it is Parliament's responsibility to deliberate on it and resolve it for Canadians. Mr. Speaker, those who say the courts have settled this question should read the comments the courts have actually written about it. For example, here's what the late Justice Bertha Wilson said in her 1988 Morgenthaler decision that threw out Canada's abortion law. She wrote, and I quote, "The precise point in the development of the fetus at which the state's interest in its protection becomes compelling, I leave to the informed judgment of the legislature, which is in a position to receive guidance on the subject from all the relevant disciplines. It seems to me, however, that it might fall somewhere in the second trimester," end quote. The late Justice Wilson was almost certainly not what we might understand as pro-life. Yet, Justice Wilson suggested almost exactly the study now proposed by the member for Kitchener Centre in Motion 312. If a woman like Justice Bertha Wilson, with her impeccable feminist credentials, supported such a parliamentary study, then surely anyone can. Mr. Speaker, everyone should. I'm informed that in the Tremblay versus Digg decision, the court discussed the question of whether or not a fetus is a person and said, and I quote, "Decisions based upon broad social, political, moral, and economic choices are more adequately left to the legislature," unquote. In the decision on Winnipeg Child and Family Services versus DFG, the court said, and I quote, "The point is that they are major changes attracting an array of consequences that would place the courts at the heart of a web of thorny moral and social issues, which are better dealt with by elected legislators than by the courts," unquote. In short, far from answering this question, the courts have actually suggested that Parliament holds the responsibility to deliberate on this question and to sort it out. Mr. Speaker, this is what subsection 223(1) of the Criminal Code of Canada actually says, and I quote, "A child becomes a human being within the meaning of this act when it has completely proceeded in a living state from the body of its mother, whether or not A, it has breathed, B, it has an independent circulation, or C, the navel string is severed," unquote. Mr. Speaker, this definition in law was first written down in 1644 and dates from even before that. This 17th century law was incorporated into Canadian law in the 19th century at Confederation. This definition of a human being may have made sense when it was written 400 years ago, when leeches and bloodletting were standard medical treatment. People then knew nothing about a child's development before birth. But does this definition of a human being make medical and scientific sense in the 21st century? Our knowledge of a child's development has come a long way in 400 years. Here's what I've learned about a child's development before birth. The child's heart begins to beat approximately 18 days after conception. At about 6 weeks, some of the child's brain activity can be detected. The child's eyes begin to open at 8 weeks when all body systems are present. At 9 weeks, although the mother can't feel it, independent movement begins. By week 16, eyelashes form and fingerprints are completely established. REM sleep has been recorded from a child at age 17 weeks, suggesting that the child is dreaming. By week 19, children have been observed to respond to specific sounds, and by week 20, observed being startled by loud external noises. And lastly, by the seventh month, if the child is born, his or her lungs have developed enough to provide adequate ventilation without assistance. Other organs are sufficiently formed to support the child's life. Canadians and this House should hear from experts about facts like these. Based on what I've learned about the development of a child before birth, it seems to me that a child is a human being well before the moment of complete birth. If this is true and accurate, our definition of a human being is wrong. If none of this is true or accurate, Canadians and this House should hear that too. Mr. Speaker, if the scientific evidence tells us that our legal definition of who is a human being is wrong, is it right for us to ignore it? If the evidence shows by scientifically established fact that a child is a human being before the moment of complete birth, then surely Parliament has a responsibility to amend that definition of when a child becomes a human being that I read a moment ago. Why would anyone oppose a respectful dialogue to gather evidence on such an important law? Mr. Speaker, that is the objective of Motion 312. Motion 312 does not propose any legislation on any subject. Motion 312 merely proposes that a parliamentary committee look at the evidence of the development of a child before the moment of complete birth. I believe it is always helpful to shed light on an issue. Armed with complete knowledge, Parliament can assess what, if anything, should be done about subsection 223(1)'s definition of a human being. This is a necessary step in reconciling Canadian law with scientific facts. But if Parliament, acting on behalf of all Canadians, refuses to even discuss the issue, it will be letting down the vast majority of Canadians who believe in honest and just laws, grounded in reality as we now understand it. To recap, Mr. Speaker, Motion 312 calls for a respectful conversation among Canadians. Who better than Canadians can have that kind of conversation? Exactly. Let's talk about Motion 312 and what it really says. Need it be said, we live in a representative parliamentary democracy governed by laws that should be informed by the best of current human knowledge. In 1988, the Supreme Court was clear that this question was not for the court to decide, but for Parliament. That is why this House is elected, to hear informed witnesses, to consider that testimony, to deliberate, and to exercise good, informed judgment. This is an important issue that deserves that kind of testimony and deliberation. Let me remind this House, Mr. Speaker, that Motion 312 insists that all options be reported and that no decision be made by the committee to which it is referred. I also remind my colleagues that this is about fundamental, universal human rights and about a 400-year-old law frozen in time. Should it be immune to scrutiny and our consideration? Surely not.
Right.
I ask all members of this House to join me in supporting Motion 312.
Hear, hear.
Thank
hear,
you,
hear.
Mr. Speaker.
Well done.
Resuming debate, the Honourable Member from London Fanshawe.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. The motion being debated before the House today is nothing less than an attempt to reopen the abortion debate in Canada. This is quite literally a slap in the face to women who have fought long and hard for the right to control their own bodies and their ability to determine for themselves when they wish to have children. Motion 312 states that a special committee of the House be appointed and directed to review the declaration in subsection 2231 of the Criminal Code of Canada, which states that a child becomes a human being only at the moment of complete birth. The member for Kitchener Centre's desire to open up this debate has an end goal of changing the legislation to enable a fetus to be declared a human being. We are all very aware, Mr. Speaker, that such a change in the definition will directly place Canada on the regressive path to banning abortions. The member of Kitchener Centre held a press conference earlier this week. In that press conference, he quite clearly stated that the current definition of a person is an exclusion of a class of people. These types of statements distort the truth. In reality, over 90% of abortions in Canada are done in the first trimester. Only 2-3% are done after 16 weeks, and no doctor in this country performs abortions past 20 or 21 weeks, except for compelling health or genetic reasons. The comments by the member are a blatant attempt to misrepresent the facts. A fertilized egg is not a class of people, and I am offended that the member would shamelessly misrepresent the women's rights movement as an example of why we should open the door to changing abortion rights in Canada. Mr. Speaker, I would like to highlight several legal precedents that have already dealt with the question that Motion 312 raises. In particular, Tremblay versus Daigle, Dobson versus Dobson, Winnipeg Child and Family Services versus Ms. G. Borowski versus the Attorney General of Canada, and the Crown versus Morgenthaler. These rulings have concluded or noted that the fetus has never been a person nor been included in the meaning of everyone in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, that a fetus must be born alive to enjoy rights, the born alive rule, and that the law has always treated a pregnant woman and her fetus as one person under the law. We need not look far to see the danger of M312. In the United States, fetuses have legal personhood rights in at least 38 states, though most through so-called fetal homicide laws, laws that are supposedly aimed at third parties who assault pregnant women. These laws in reality are used to justify prosecuting pregnant women under child welfare laws and function much like the member for Edmonton Sherwood Park's 2008 bill, C-484, which proposed changes to the criminal code that, if passed, would have also threatened a woman's right to choose. If you recall the intent of that bill, it was to amend the criminal code to have two charges laid against anyone killing a pregnant woman and would, in effect, have given legal rights to a fetus, thereby changing the definition of when a fetus becomes a person under the law. While the stated purpose of the bill was protection of a woman and her fetus, in practice, like Motion 312, these laws are primarily used to justify prosecuting women. And, Mr. Speaker, motions and bills such as these create obvious dangers for those who counsel or perform abortions. They also turn pregnant women into lesser citizens whose rights are subordinated to those of a fertilized egg. What is absolutely clear, is that Motion 312 is taking aim at a woman's right to choose and is a direct attack on jurisprudence. Canada was once a world leader in the promotion and protection of women's rights and gender equality. It was committed to the view that gender equality is not only a human rights issue, but also an essential component of sustainable development, social justice, peace, and security. These goals can only be achieved if women are able to participate as equal partners, decision makers, and beneficiaries of the sustainable development of their societies. How can Canada be considered a world leader in women's rights when we have members of Parliament suggesting that we revert to the barbaric days of gender inequality through the restriction of abortion? When abortions are illegal, women do not stop having them. They only take more risks to access the service, and these risks can have deadly consequences. For instance, in South Africa, before abortions were legalized in 1997, an average of 425 deaths stemmed from unsafe abortions every year. Today, the numbers are below 20. In Latin America, most abortions are considered illegal, yet roughly 3.8 million procedures are performed each year and are directly linked to over 4,000 avoidable deaths. The same happened here. Before abortion laws in Canada were struck down, there were over 35,000 illegal abortions taking place every year. And between 1926 and 1947, there were an estimated 4,000 to 6,000 deaths as a result of desperate women submitting themselves to clandestine procedures. despite assurances from the Prime Minister, who is known for his tight control over his caucus members, that government does not plan to reopen the abortion debate, there is a troubling trend in the government's backdoor actions and its support for backbenchers who are continually trying to revive this issue. In the last Parliament, the member for Winnipeg South tabled Bill C-510, an act to prevent coercion of pregnant women to abort. In 2008, as I mentioned earlier, we saw Bill C-484, a bill which nearly the entire Conservative caucus supported, including the Prime Minister. In 2010, as part of the Maternal Health Initiative at the G8 Summit in Muskoka, the government imposed a moratorium on the funding of safe abortions in 10 developing countries, emphasizing the protection of life, yet ignoring the consequences of systemic rape in some of those countries. The statistics from those developing countries are heartbreaking. Approximately 70,000 women die each year due to unsafe abortion, and 5 million are hospitalized because of complications resulting from unsafe abortion. And, Mr. Speaker, women's groups in Canada fighting for comprehensive maternal health funding were told to shut up about abortion by a Conservative senator, or else there may be backlash. The senator contended that Canada is still a country with free and accessible abortion. Leave it there. This thinly veiled threat points to a greater fallacy, that abortion services are in fact available across Canada. Some provinces have very few hospitals providing services, and Prince Edward Island has none. Canadian women living in rural areas and those in jurisdictions without an abortion provider travel long distances, encountering significant costs and additional stress. These constraints have the most impact on young women, those who have little job security, or women with significant family obligations. Turning back the clock and reopening the debate on when human life begins is a dangerous path to take. The Canadian government should be working to strengthen women's rights instead of heading down a path that exposes women to the dangers of illicit, unsafe procedures. Women in Canada have the right to choose. That's been established by the Supreme Court of Canada, and we demand that this government ensure this right and that all equality rights are protected. We need a government that will champion programs and policies that ensure women's contributions in society, the economy, and leadership in this country are respected and encouraged. Access to safe legal abortions are integral to these rights. Mr. Speaker, I want to make it very clear. I do not support this motion. New Democrats do not support this motion, and we will actively fight against any motion or bill that will threaten a woman's right to choose. It is both frightening and insulting that the men who have introduced these bills and motions have so little respect for a woman's ability to determine what is best for her, her body, and her family. The right rests solely with the women who choose. No one has the right to interfere. The Supreme Court has upheld that right, and so should the members of this Parliament.
Resuming debate, the Parliamentary Secretary for the Minister of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's a great honour to be able to be here today. And I just wanted to point out, I received over 200 emails just last night in my office supporting the position that I'm taking today. I've had over 1,500 responses to my office encouraging me to support Motion 312. And I find it interesting that many of them come from young women. So I think that's a rebuke to the opposition to remind them that there are young women in this country who believe what's being proposed here. And we're going to address that issue today. So I'm pleased to address the matter of Motion 312. And to do so, I think it's necessary to refer to subsection 223.1, Canada's 400-year-old definition of human being. And I will quote it as follows. It says, a child becomes a human being within the meaning of this act when it has completely proceeded in a living state from the body of its mother, whether or not it has breathed, it has an independent circulation, or the navel string is severed. Many Canadians, Mr. Speaker, have questioned the accuracy of this definition. They ask, what is the medical evidence? Does a child become a human being at some point before the moment of complete birth, or is it at the point fixed by subsection 223.1? Do Canadians believe that a child transforms from a non-human into a human being at the moment of complete birth, as subsection 223.1 dictates? Motion 312 attempts to address this question. The answer to the question has implications for Canadians. It has implications for Canada's justice system. Motion 312 calls on this country's leaders, parliamentarians, to look at the evidence and to ask, does that evidence verify or does it contradict subsection 223.1? I think, Mr. Speaker, we need to recognize that a majority of Canadians believe that human life begins long before a person is born. Now, we can understand that if the evidence establishes that a child does in fact become a human being before the moment of complete birth, then subsection 223.1 has some major problems, and it is actually a law that dehumanizes and excludes a whole class of human beings from legal protection. That's why we need to pass Motion 312, in order to get the facts about this issue. This is a very serious matter. If we presently have a law that decrees a certain human being is not a human being, is that an honest and acceptable law? Could such a law ever be considered just or legitimate? And if Parliament finds itself in a situation where it allows one law that decrees the dehumanization and exclusion of an entire class of people, what are the safeguards that will prevent us from finding reasons to decree that others are not human beings as well? And this is just not a theoretical and academic question, because many of the letters and petitions that I have received in my office have referenced the past. They point out that several times legislatures and Supreme Courts have supported other laws which, like subsection 223.1, have decreed the exclusion of a class of people from legal protection. They mentioned, for example, in the 1850s, the United States Supreme Court issued a decree. They ruled that African Americans would not be considered human persons under U.S. law. Instead, they would be excluded from recognition even though they were human beings. In the early 20th century, our Canadian Supreme Court ruled that women were not to be considered human persons for purposes of all Canadian laws. Instead, they would be dehumanized, excluded from recognition, even though they were human beings. In Germany in the 1930s, laws were passed that dehumanized and excluded mentally challenged people from the protection of law, even though they were human beings. And such laws have been opposed more and more over the last 400 years. By the middle of the last century, Canadians and others around the world reached an international consensus, and that is that laws which dehumanize people and exclude any human beings are condemned. Instead, the consensus is that every person has an inherent worth and dignity based on who they are as a human being. Governments and laws can never legitimately assign or withhold the value of any human being. Instead, they can only recognize the worth and dignity with which each human being is created. Now, subsection 223.1 has been overlooked until now, but the question really is, does it directly contradict these principles of universal human rights that so many Canadians have fought for and have died to defend? Do we have a consensus in Canada in favor of universal human rights, or are we willing to accept that our government and or laws may dehumanize and exclude classes of people with false definitions of what it means to be human? I don't think Canadians have come to that point. They continue to believe strongly in the unique value of each human life from its beginning to its natural conclusion, and they would expect that Parliament is able to discuss these issues. Now, Mr. Speaker, that belief in the value of human life needs to be protected and encouraged. It's not enough that we properly define human life, I believe. It's just as important that we continue as a culture to reaffirm the uniqueness and inherent dignity of every human life. That's how we find good and just solutions to the many life issues that we will be facing as legislators and as a country. To change 223 and then to say, well, we don't recognize human life as having value in itself, will lead us down some very dangerous paths. This is not an unreasonable concern. Our culture is in danger of changing its view of the value of human life. We all know that. There are many illustrations that are readily apparent. We know there's an active attempt within the medical community to convince parents it's necessary to eliminate Down syndrome children before they are born. Recently, two European academics have proposed that newborn infants should not be treated as human persons, since newborn infants are essentially no different than children are before birth. I'm told they use the Down syndrome argument for elimination prior to birth in order to justify their afterbirth proposal. Another Canadian example would be that the member for Kitchener Centre has found evidence that 40 to 50 children every year in Canada are born alive but later die of injuries inflicted by what is referred to as the termination of pregnancy. And these are injuries that take place before birth when subsection 223.1 has taken human rights protection away from them. The late Justice Bertha Wilson, who's as much a feminist as any person in this room, agreed that our existing criteria of complete birth was wrong. She believed the interests and rights of a child before birth should be recognized and protected from some point in the second trimester of the child's development. Justice Wilson quite reasonably suggested that Parliament resolve this by studying evidence from all the relevant disciplines. And, Mr. Speaker, this is a suggestion which is embodied in Motion 312. Justice Wilson did not think that this suggestion contradicted her rejection of Canada's last abortion law. Will abortion become illegal if we study this as Justice Wilson suggested? Absolutely not. So, Mr. Speaker, why would a 400-year-old definition of human being be frozen in time forever? Why would a 400-year-old definition of human being be forever exempt from all democratic review? Why would a 400-year-old definition of human being be severed from advances in our medical understanding? Why would parliamentarians turn their backs on this important discussion just because we're faced with diverse views on an important topic on human rights? Why wouldn't we search for consensus through informed dialogue? I ask you, Mr. Speaker, and members in this House, to accept Justice Wilson's suggestion for Parliament to inform itself. I ask you, as members, to stand up for the Canadian consensus and legacy that every human being has an inherent worth and dignity, which all our laws must recognize. I ask members to approve the open-minded, evidence-based study, which is all that Motion 312 proposes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Reprise du débat, l'honorable député de Château-Gay-Saint-Constant.
Resuming debate, the honorable member for Château-Gay-Saint-Constant. Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm pleased to rise today to speak to this motion and to oppose it vociferously. I oppose it vociferously because of my personal beliefs, but also at the behest of many of my constituents who are concerned with the tabling of a motion like this. Now, I'm honored to speak in the House today, but it's with great disappointment that I speak to the House on a motion that the majority of Canadians felt had been dealt with. The member wants to reopen a debate on an issue that we felt had been resolved for many years. It would appear that the member for Kitchener Centre wants to break down the social peace in our country. The member for Kitchener Centre moved a motion calling that a special committee of the House be created to review the declaration in subsection 2231 of the Criminal Code, which states that a child becomes a human being only at the moment of complete birth, and to answer the questions herein set forth with respect to the makeup and powers of the committee. I'd like to clarify some statements made by my colleague for Kitchener Centre, remarks that he made in his speech during the first hour of debate and in other areas. The definition dates to 1892 and not back to the 16th century, as he has indicated. Many pieces of legislation were sanctioned at the start of Confederation and are still in vigor, in force rather, and pertinent throughout the country. He also mentioned or stated that abortions were performed in the third trimester, and said that no rights protect the fetus in the third trimester. I would remind him that 90% of abortions are in the first trimester and that 0.3% of abortions take place after the 20th week, especially for health-related reasons, health of the mother, the woman, when the woman's health is in danger. I'd also like to point out that the abortion rate has drops by 1% per year. So it's not true that children or in the third quarter are being aborted. So we don't want women to be manipulated. As I stated earlier, Mr. Speaker, men and women believed that this debate had been resolved many years ago following a number of legal decisions, including from the Supreme Court. The courts are the ones that are dealing with these issues and make decisions on our individual rights under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. This is an important part of our legal and political history. I'd like to cover some of the
Past cases to remind colleagues opposite in case they've forgotten. 1988, the Morgenthaler decision stipulated that the provision in the criminal code on abortion was unconstitutional as it violated Section 7 of the Charter. As a result of Morgenthaler, several provinces, through the functioning of their health system and reimbursement of fees, tried to limit access to abortion. Abortion was banned if it wasn't done in a public hospital, and fees were not reimbursed. The Morgenthaler case versus Prince Edward Island, New Brunswick, Manitoba, and Quebec all ruled that attempts to limit abortion by the provinces ran counter to the Charter. All of these decisions put forth the women's inalienable rights over her body. As our colleague for Gatineau stated in a speech, there's a fundamental aspect missing from the speech made by the Minister of Kitchener Centre, that of women's rights to use and be responsible for their bodies. This is included in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, but the member for Kitchener Centre seems to have forgotten that or is simply ignoring it. The member states that he wants a study in good faith on this issue and that the section of the criminal code provides a dishonest definition. Well, I'll be talking. I'd like to say a few words about this. The member for Kitchener Centre states that Motion 312 is designed solely to call for a study of data relevant to the determination of when a child becomes a human, and proposes no answer to this question. The committee would have a directive not to take any decision and formulate no recommendations, but simply to make a report of options. However, the government whip stated that the primary objective of this motion is to restrict abortion in Canada to a certain stage of fetal development. The member for Kitchener Centre also stated in an interview to Metro Ottawa in April,
complexes relatives à l'avortement pourront être débattus à partir de cette conclusion honnête. Soit le député se contredit lui-même ou soit le député de Kitchener Centre cache aux Canadiens sa réelle.
The member for Kitchener Centre also granted an interview to Metro Ottawa in April. We'd ask him, however, to have a little bit of restraint when he talks about dishonesty. The Conservatives don't have a good track record on this issue. They have long attempted to criminalize abortion. The Mulroney government tabled the bill C-343, but it was defeated at third reading. In 2004, the leader of the opposition at the day, who is now Prime Minister, said that abortion was not an issue that the first Conservative government would be interested in. In 2008, the member for Edmonton-Sherwood Park attempted to create a breach by putting forth the bill C-484, which was designed to transform a murder of a pregnant woman into a double homicide or double murder. In 2010, as part of a maternal health issue at the G8 in Muskoka, the Prime Minister imposed a moratorium on projects for abortion in developing countries. In 2010, the member for Winnipeg Centre tabled C-510, which dealt with abortion. In 2011, the Prime Minister reiterates his promise that the party would not reopen the debate on abortion. However, we've got the result here. The member for Kitchener Centre is tabling a motion, the ultimate objective which is to limit access to abortion. It really makes me wonder if the Conservatives have a consistent approach. The Prime Minister seems to be having difficulty keeping the extremists on this position and to prevent them from opening the debate. It's clear that we can't have confidence in the Conservative Party to protect women's rights. How many times will they attempt to reopen the debate? The Conservatives feel that government must be as small as possible and must not interfere in private lives of people.
Mais curieusement, cela ne semble
like was the case in the firearms registry. But curiously, this doesn't apply to women and their rights. With this kind of motion, we could be criminalizing abortion, and that is completely unacceptable. When abortions are criminalized, women will turn to abortions under conditions that may jeopardize their lives, without accounting for the criminal prosecution that could follow. Look at the situation in the United States, Mr. Speaker. Women have to go travel hundreds of kilometers to have access to this procedure. They have to sacrifice money that could be spent on rent, food, in order to pay for abortions. They have to go to clinics and listen to anti-abortion propaganda, cross the gauntlet of violent pro-lifers in parking lots at the clinics, and oftentimes there are even bomb warnings in the parking lots. And this is what women have to go through to obtain an abortion. Is this the kind of society that we want? Where we go back so far? We fought for decades to protect individual rights. We don't... do we want to go back into the past and impose this on society, on women? No one should be judging women who have had recourse to an abortion. In the New Democratic Party, we are strongly opposed to this motion, which is a direct attack on women's right to choose. The Conservative government, in a majority, now is speaking out of both sides of its mouth on this issue. We want the Prime Minister to honour the promise he made to Canadians in the last election and to stop all of these backward debates. The issue of abortion must remain a decision that is made between a consenting woman and her physician. In conclusion, Mr. Speaker, I hope that all, or I can tell you that the NDP will be unanimously opposing this motion. Thank you.
Resuming debate, the Honourable Member from Langley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It is a real honour to speak on this motion, Motion 312, that has been presented by, tabled by the member from Kitchener Centre, calling for a study of Canada's 400-year-old definition of a human being. And I'm saddened by comments that I've heard falsely describing this man of honour that I have the privilege of working with in this House since 2008. And he's a man of integrity. He's a man of logic. He's a man that people in this House respect. And I think what he has asked for is reasonable. And I think it's important that we as members of Parliament and not exaggerate, not turn to rhetoric, that we show one another respect, that we listen to one another, that we debate, and we build good laws. If laws have to be changed, then they be based on science and logic, not on rhetoric, because we want a better Canada for us, for our children and our grandchildren, for coming generations. And as I share my speech, Mr. Speaker, the question that goes to my heart is, why is Canada out of sync with the rest of the world? Why does Canada have legislation that's in par with North Korea? Canada and North Korea. Why is Canada out of sync? Why do we have 400-year-old legislation when the rest of the world has moved on? We've heard about going back to the Dark Ages. The member from Kitchener Centre is saying, let's go to the future and let's look what's happening in the rest of the world. Let us have a study based on science. All the best evidence. Let's protect women's rights. Let's protect every right. Let's protect women's rights, children's rights, adults' rights, all human rights. And let's look at what's happening in the rest of the world. And I'm really saddened that the rhetoric is so strong at times and it's not based on logic. And I think maybe they're afraid of the truth, what that study would reveal. It's important to understand that the context of the motion is about Canada's 400-year-old definition of a human being. Remarkably, polls show that almost 80% of Canadians think that Canada's law already protects children in the last trimester before birth. Sadly, that's not true. There is no legislation in Canada protecting children until the point of complete birth, and is in that in line with what is reasonable. The rest of the world, other than North Korea and Canada, have said no, that's not reasonable. That's not what scientific evidence shows. Subsection 223 actually strips away all recognition of humanity from children until the point of complete birth. Subsection 2231 is a law that actually says some human beings are not human. So as parliamentarians, we have an important job to do informing Canadians that our law actually does not protect human rights in any way before the moment of complete birth. It says that a child becomes a human being within the meaning of this act when it is completely proceeded in a living state from the body of the mother, whether or not it is breathed, it has an independent circulation, or the navel string is severed. Think about what that means. A child whose little toe was still in the birth canal has not fully proceeded from its mother's body and is therefore not human in Canada and can be and is terminated. How can that possibly be right and just in a Canadian society when it's not in the rest of the world other than Canada and North Korea? Why does our law take such an unusual position in spite of all the recent advances in medical science about the development of a child before birth? And Canada is a world leader in those sciences. Why does Canadian law say that a child isn't a human being until the moment of complete birth, when any parent knows that a child is there? Most parents are able to see their child's heartbeat, even see their child sucking their little thumb long before the moment of complete birth. Why does Canadian law decree that such children are not human before the moment of complete birth? That's a good question. And that study would hopefully provide some guidance. The study that is being requested has no conclusions. It's a study to find out the facts, and that committee would make recommendations. Maybe that committee may not make any recommendations. It's up to the committee. Why would we be afraid of a study? Why is it so important that Parliament recognize the fundamental human rights of every human being? Mr. Speaker, the answer can be found in the sweep of history over the past 400 years since our definition of human being was enacted. Tragedy after tragedy resulted when powerful people decreed that some people would not be treated as human beings. We can look over history with horror. One after another around the world, laws that strip the vulnerable of fundamental human rights have been repealed. And history will look back on this moment when you and I were in this house. Maybe even we will look back on our life in our last breaths. And I experienced that this summer, saying goodbye to my father-in-law. And I've said goodbye to my father, Mr. Speaker, and my mother. And it makes me look back on my life. And will I have regrets, or will I hold my head high on how I voted this coming Wednesday on this motion? Will I be afraid of the truth, or will I go for it and do the right thing? I hope all of us will do the right thing. Apart from a diminishing number of U.S. states, the only other countries in the world that share Canada's complete lack of recognition whether human rights are before birth is Canada and North Korea. Mr. Speaker, Canada every year, 40 to 50 deaths of infants who were born alive but then died later were due to injuries inflicted during pregnancy termination when no human rights were recognized in Canada law. Canadian courts have repeatedly ruled that it is Parliament's duty. And who is that? That's us here in this sacred house. It's our duty to decide at what point human rights of children should begin. Should those rights begin at the age of viability? Should it be the international standards in Europe, which is approximately 12 weeks? Some governments in Europe are sooner than 12. There's the choice to end a pregnancy can be made a little bit earlier than 12 or not at all, but the standard in Europe is 12 weeks. Nothing after 12 weeks. You can choose up to 12 weeks. In the United States, it's the age of viability, which is about 20 weeks. Why does Canada have the same policies as North Korea. A study would reveal that. We need to make decisions and laws in this country that are based on logic, science, and truth. And I, therefore, will be supporting this motion. I want to thank the member from Kitchener for his integrity, his honesty, and for bringing this before this House. Thank you so much.
The chair will now recognize the sponsor of this motion, the member, honorable member from Kitchener Centre.
Mr. Speaker, our great democracy was founded on the promise that two founding nations in conflict could reconcile their differences peaceably. Generations of Canadians have lived and died to defend the dream of universal human rights and honest laws so necessary to fulfill that promise. These ideals created unity out of diversity and made Canada a bright beacon of hope. The sweep of history for 400 years has brought ever greater recognition of the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. That bedrock foundation anchors Canada's essential character. We're here in Parliament to honor that vision of Canada. We're here to seek out a spirit of compromise amid passionate debate. We are here to embrace advancing knowledge in the service of universal human rights. Motion 312 honors those essential duties. Motion 312 seeks merely to shine the light of 21st century knowledge upon our 400-year-old law, which decrees the dehumanization and exclusion of a whole class of people, children before the moment of complete birth. About abortion, I say this: recognizing children as human before the moment of complete birth will not resolve that issue. Even Justice Bertha Wilson, who championed abortion rights in the Morgenthaler decision, wrote that Parliament should inform itself from the relevant disciplines. The very proposal embodied in Motion 312. Recognizing the reality that children are human beings before complete birth will affirm the hallowed principle that human rights are universal, not a gift of the state that can be cancelled by subsection 223(1). It would be a triumph of leadership to insist that our definition of human being must not remain frozen in time forever, immune from the light of advancing knowledge, immune from all democratic governance, and immune from the spirit of open dialogue. It would honor our commitment to honest laws, to recognize a child's worth and dignity as a human being before the moment of complete birth, if the evidence establishes that as fact. It would fulfill our shared vision of Canada to allow, despite extreme and intransigent opposition, a mere study about human rights, even if modern evidence might cause some to question our laws. Or will Parliament reject those Canadian ideals? Is that what Parliament has come to? I thank, and many Canadians thank, the members who stand with me against that dismal view. Yet, we in Parliament cannot ourselves sustain. We cannot protect. We cannot, without help, safeguard this great vision of Canada. The hope of a Canada governed by honest laws rests in the hearts of every Canadian. The pledge offered by countless Canadians to the high principle of universal human rights will not be overcome by any decision of this Parliament. We may safely place our confidence in the certainty that Canadians will not rest content with the perpetual absence of open dialogue on this issue. There is no more noble undertaking than to fulfill that essential promise of Canada. Join me in the conversation so necessary to reconcile Canadians. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Hear, hear.
The time provided for debate has expired. Accordingly, the question is as follows. Mr. Woodworth, seconded by Mr. Watson, move that a special committee of the House be appointed and directed to review the declaration in subsection 223, bracket 1 of the Criminal Code, which states that a child becomes a human being only at the moment of complete birth, and to answer the question hereinafter set forth, that the membership of the special committee consists of 12 members, which shall include 7 members from the government party, 4 members from the official opposition, and 1 member from the Liberal Party, provided that the chair shall be from the government party, that the members to serve on the said committee be appointed by the Standing Committee on Procedure and House Affairs, and the membership report of the special committee be presented to the House no later than 20 sitting days after the adoption of this motion. Que l'on autorise les substitutions dans la compétition.
That substitutions through the membership of the special committee be allowed, if required, in manner provided by Standing Order 114.2, that the special committee have all the powers of a standing committee as provided in the standing orders, and that the special committee present its final report to the House of Commons within 10 months after the adoption of this motion, with answers to the following questions. 1. What medical evidence exists to demonstrate that a child is or is not a human being before the moment of complete birth? 2. Is the preponderance of medical evidence consistent with the declaration in subsection 2231 that a child is only a human being at the moment of complete birth? 3. What are the legal impact and consequences of subsection 2231 on the fundamental human rights of a child before the moment of complete birth? 4. What are the options available to Parliament in the exercise of its legislative authority in accordance with the Constitution and decisions of the Supreme Court to affirm, amend, or replace subsection 2231?
Is it the pleasure of the House to adopt the motion?
Yeah.
All those in favor of the motion will please say yay.
Yay.
All those opposed to the motion will please say nay.
Nay.
In my opinion, the yays have it. Pursuant to Standing Order number 93, the division stands deferred until Wednesday, September 26, 2012, immediately before the time provided for private members' business. It being 2:32, this House stands adjourned until next Monday at 11 a.m. pursuant to Standing Order 24, sub 1.